This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Crazy Carl's Pizza presents Rams Weekly with KFKA's Brady Hull and the Coloradoans' Kevin Lytle. Let's talk Rams football.
Let's talk some Rams football. Kevin, you told me, you know, at the end of this game, we got something positive to talk about for a change for CSU football.
Yeah, it's a nice difference. We've had a lot of these that are, what, like a kind of therapy session almost talk it out, and that's not the case. And what's crazy, I don't remember where I first saw it, so I did a bad job crediting.
That's okay.
First time CSU's won a season opener in 8 years.
Is that
Brian Roth maybe put that on?
Maybe so.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's absolutely wild. I mean, a lot of times in these shows, we get to like week four, and we're going, hey, let's talk CSU basketball. Let's get into the basketball mode.
Yeah. No, there's been too much bad. Obviously, super small sample size, one game. But, you know, we talked about how much that game was going to impact the mood around, you know, CSU football fan base and everything, and really couldn't have gone any better. You know, that's not to say the team played 100% perfect, but as an overall day and performance, like, you know, you really couldn't ask for more. It was ideal.
Yeah, it really was. 35-13, Colorado State wins, keeping the boot in Fort Collins. Let's talk about Jim Mora first, man.
Yeah.
I mean, Jim Mora, he just has that presence about him. I thought it was interesting in the press room at the end for coach's post-game press conference. Basically, his whole entourage
kind of
storms into the room.
Yeah, that was, you know, a lot of times, like, you know, in the Norvell era, there'd be some, you know, friends and family in there after wins. Tend to be, you know, pretty quiet in the back. Mora had kind of a fan base, a lot of family, maybe some, I don't know who everyone was, is a boatload of them. And yeah, clapped him into the room, which is definitely different. You know, those are, that's not usually a clapping scenario, situation, whatever. I posted a little video of him with all the clapping. I was like, yeah, maybe this is me overthinking things, but I was like, I want to make sure people know this isn't like the journalist pack clapping Jim Mora. It was his fan, you know, family and friends. But it kind of fit the vibe and everything of it was such a big day for so many people and his family included. I mean, he's talked about how in pregame he was kind of awed by the college football environment. So it was a big day for them, too. Even though he's coached a million games at a bunch of different levels, he was kind of, you know, touched by that one.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I ended up in the elevator with Jim Mora dad. Is that what we say then? We don't say senior.
Yeah,
we say dad.
Yeah, so Jim has said they're not junior, senior. They have different middle names, but they are both Jim Mora. The elder Jim Mora.
Jim Mora 1, Jim Mora 2.
Elder Jim Mora.
Yeah. It's kind of a surreal moment, Kevin, because you and I are about the same age. Grew up, you know, he's... I wouldn't say he's a legend of the NFL, but certainly his
very
time
with
the Saints,
known, yeah.
You know, he brought them back from being a bad franchise. He was in the playoffs a lot.
Playoffs.
And of course, that's what happened in the elevator. In walks Jim Mora. I'm doing a double take, like, oh, wow, he's right here.
Yeah.
Guy behind me pushing carts, food carts and
really?
Stuff, goes, is that, that's Coach Jim Mora. And he says it loud and he goes, playoffs?
Really?
Elder Jim Mora is just kind of like,
oh, man. He probably gets sick of that. I had the chance to meet him Friday at the boot run ceremony as well. And him and his wife were one of the ones or a couple of the ones in the press conference setting there as well. So, yeah, like I say, it was a big family affair.
It's cool. It's really cool. And Jim Mora, what can you say? It seemed like, you know, from the start of this, and you and I both agree, Tanner's on the opposite end of this, but I liked how he handled the quarterback thing. It worked out well for him. But very much a business approach. I think even, and correct me if I'm wrong, but even from the lockdown perspective of athletics, like I'm trying to get interviews on this week, and it's like, no, you know, all that stuff's got to be planned out a week in advance. Here's when practices, here's where we're doing this stuff.
Yeah.
It just seems a lot tighter than I remember it being a year ago.
Yeah, no, they definitely very detailed plan and schedule for everything, I would say. I've kind of said and written this, you know, big things and little things all, you know, kind of to a fine detail on, you know, how Coach Mora wants them to be.
Yeah, and that's kind of my takeaway right off the bat. And again, you see that show up on the field. We talked about this earlier, Kevin, on the whole show, but Colorado State up 14-13 after Wyoming takes the opening second half kickoff. They drive all the way down, score. Tyler Hughes runs it in, and it's 14-13. The following possession for CSU is a three and out. At that moment, I thought, oh no, I'm not out on Jim Mora by any means, but I'm thinking,
no, you get a little
still
bit of that
the same Rams at this stage.
Panic, yeah. No, I mean, that was a big swing. There's the 6-point swing late in the first half where CSU, you know, should have handled the end of half situation a little better and then missed a field goal. And then Wyoming goes and hits a field goal after a couple big plays. Then the quick touchdown, where it wasn't just Wyoming score a touchdown. They went right through CSU. It was like five plays or something like that. And then a three and out. And, yeah, it's like, oh, boy. But, man, they found the big play. And it was a sequence of, like, four plays because Wyoming had a big pass play on third and long that was called back because of a legal man downfield. Then the next play, their running back kind of drops one, if we're being frank, into Umar Diamande's hands. And then I think it's two plays later, R.J. Vick with the deep touchdown. Basically from there, CSU is totally in control.
100%.
I mean, that the fourth quarter, and maybe we should talk about that. How many times has CSU been not good in a fourth quarter? And they absolutely dominated. I think they had like 11 minutes of possession in the fourth quarter, outscored Wyoming 14-0 in the fourth quarter. Like, it was absolute domination in the fourth quarter. CSU scored the final 21 points. These are all things that we haven't seen CSU do a lot of.
No, I think there were just a lot of game-changing moments. Even going to the defensive side, like Tyson Summers last year, same defensive coordinator. I don't think this defense was perfect by any stretch, but it's hard to say that when they didn't give up a single third down conversion.
Totally, and I've been writing about this. I've been saying it because you still get some fans grumble, you know, like that drive to start the second half. Oh, they're giving up big plays. In today's college football, you're not going to hold someone to 120 yards. It just does not happen. Offenses are too good. That's not the way it is. And Tyson Summers' defense, you know, we should know this by now. It's built on aggressive attack. It's kind of high risk, high reward. There are going to be times that they get beat, but the goal is to cause enough chaos and win big plays, and they did that. Wyoming, like you said, 0 of 8 on third downs, 0 of 1 on fourth downs, so total 0 of 9, which is incredible, plus 4 turnovers. I mean, that's, you can't ask for 4 turnovers every game, of course, but if CSU's winning the turnover battle like that, I mean, big time. So, yeah, that defense, I think, was great in the biggest moments.
Isn't that how the design is supposed to be for Tyson Summers?
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, we're going to give up yards, but we're going to be aggressive. We're going to blitz a lot. We're going to force quarterbacks to make bad decisions. And then we're going to try to benefit from that by getting those interceptions, those forced fumbles, whatever. That's the design. So Rams fans should be ready for that. You're probably going to give up a lot of yards.
Give up some yards. Like I say, it's not, it's just not feasible to think that you're just going to force three and out, three and out, three and out. That's just not how college football works today. So, yeah, they try and create chaos to create turnovers, negative plays, and that's what you got at a pretty darn good rate.
Yeah, that pick, though, we're talking about in that third quarter, Umar Diamande with the big interception, and that guy was making plays all
It's day. Nice when... selfishly, when what I've been saying and writing shows true, like it kind of hopefully tells people I'm not totally stupid. And I've been saying for a long time, again, it's not like rocket science, I figured this out, but Umar Diamande is the real deal. And man, he looked it. He was all over the field. Even if you take the pick out, he was all over the field. And then, yeah, that's kind of the icing on the cake there. He was Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Week, which I get to vote on. And it's one of those, I vote Hosseini. And then I'm going through and I vote Diamande for defense. It's like, it might be a homer, but you look at the other ones and it was so easy.
Yeah,
it was so easy.
Yeah, well, offensively, yeah, Hosseini, Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Week, too. So not much of a better way to start your very first Pac-12, not a Pac-12 game, but being a member
being
of the Pac-12. You come away with the big rivalry win against your
a Mountain
foe.
West team. I mean, the lawsuits are done, but it would be naive to suggest that all is well and happy and the two sides are best friends again. That game matters.
Yeah, you get that win, and then you have two players that are your Pac-12 players of the week.
Not a bad start.
Not a bad start.
I believe, I looked at this, I believe it's since 2014, I think it was, that CSU last had both offense and defense player of the week in the conference. Now, you know, those awards aren't like the be-all, end-all, but it is interesting.
Yeah, and we'll take a look at the rest of the Pac-12, too. We're going to have our first official Pac-12 rankings that you and I have
put together.
Power rankings. We used to do this in Mount West. Doesn't make sense to do that anymore.
That'd be weird.
Still did that. But, no, I think you have to be – and I like what you said because that's the feeling. You know, it's easy in the moment to just say, wow, 35-13 after you lost 28-0 a year ago. It's easy to just go, brand new Rams, this is going to be great. But you also have to slow down a little bit. Wyoming's the opposite right now. You said it off the air earlier, Kevin. Wyoming, it feels like Wyoming's in the same spot as another Jay was this time last year. And strangely enough, they're taking on UNC this weekend, which we all talked about. If the Rams lose to UNC, he's done.
Yeah.
If they struggle or what happened, We all kind of think maybe that's what set these wheels really in motion for Norvell.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's no doubt Jay Sovell is under pressure for Wyoming now. I mean, has been, not just last week, but that adds to it. You know, I think they have some talent in that room, but you've got to win games. Their fans seem to be pretty angsty. I know you talk to Cody Tucker sometimes, and I imagine that's kind of the vibe he's given, that there's some angst around there. So, yeah, they have a lot of pressure now, too. And that's what these rivalry games do. It changes the tenor so much. And from, you know, we've talked about from the Mora side, you know, naturally, because that's kind of who we cover. But look at last week's game from the Wyoming-Sovell side. If he had won that, it would have eased a lot of that angst that some of the fans might have. So, yeah, those games, they mean a lot.
Yeah, and I actually, funny referencing that, Cody Tucker was with us yesterday, I believe, and talked about, we talked a lot about Tyson Summers in the defense, really, was that overwhelming blitz that they had that really seemed to throw everybody off schedule. And that's what you want to see. And for Tyson Summers to kind of have that, I think there are a lot of Rams fans that were skeptical about him coming back, Kevin. Does that feel true?
No, I think that's fair. I think, you know, there's some skeptical of his defense. I think the results when he was interim coach clouded some judgment, too, which I've said all along, you shouldn't consider that. Like, what he had to do as interim coach is totally different than the DC role. But yeah, there's no doubt. I think some people think, oh, he blitzes a lot, so it's predictable. No, because, yeah, everyone knows pressure's coming, but he sends it from all sorts of different angles, and it's all about timing, picking the right one. And that's what play calling is on both sides, right? If you're playing a game of checkers or chess, whatever you want to call it, you need to make the right call that the other side isn't anticipating. And yeah, he brings a lot of pressure. I saw a stat before the season, I think CSU pressured on, it was like 68% or something last year. So it's a ton, but man, when they time it right, it's really dangerous.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see kind of how that progresses throughout the course of the season. Haas Haney, kind of going back to him, Kevin, pretty solid stat line, 214 yards, 23-33, but 5 touchdowns, and a 28-yard reception on that opening drive. If that doesn't say, like, hey, Rams fans, we got a football player, we got a quarterback here, I don't know what does.
Yeah, big time. He's a big-time athlete. You know, when he was a sophomore in high school, he played receiver, had 600 or 700 yards as a receiver that year. Quarterback was Brain Fowler Nicolosi. He obviously then took over for BFN as BFN came to CSU. But yeah, he's a big-time athlete. I like just the moxie of that call, or not, well, the call, yes, but his play in it of, hey, he didn't get open. You know, the defense kind of covered it, and he sees the ball up, and he says, well, I better go battle for this and see if I can get PI, rather than, you know, not to be mean, but some quarterbacks would say, well, that's not my battle, and, you know, maybe shy away a bit. He said, I'm going to go get PI, and he did, and he happened to also make a catch. So he has some moxie to him. Jim Mora, I forget the exact phrase, but something like, he's got that cowboy in him.
Is that one of those plays, though, where like, yeah, we got it, but hey, Terrence Smith, maybe don't throw it into double coverage next
time. Yeah, I mean, that's the high-risk, high-reward with those plays of, you know, yeah, Terrence Smith played some quarterback in high school, or did play quarterback in high school, but not necessarily used to reading college-level defenses. And hey, let's be real, if you're the receiver and they dial up a pass, you want to throw it. What? Like, you don't want to eat it.
No, you're going to throw it. I knew he was going to throw it.
Totally.
He's got it up there cocked, and I'm seeing the safety over the top and the corners right with Haas. I knew he was going to throw it.
Yeah.
I mean, the emotions are high. It's the first game. It's rivalry. You're going to throw that ball.
And, hey, like, we all saw, you know, the Torrey Horton to Dallin Holker in the Rocky Mountain Showdown. Dalvin wasn't open. Torrey threw him open. So they also have that in their head, too, a little bit. Like, I'm going to throw this guy open.
Are we going to see a lot of that this year?
I think Terrence Smith is a really intriguing player because he played some quarterback in high school, caught the ball, ran the ball, does a lot. So I'm super intrigued at the ways that they could use him. And broadly, I think we saw it in the game beyond just that play. Price Tracy looks like he's pretty aggressive and creative in his calls. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see this kind of Price Tracy-led offense evolve.
Now, this offense, there were a lot of 11 different guys, right, that caught
11 caught passes, one being Haas, so he threw to 10 guys.
And this is another one you can tip the cap to you, Kevin. You said last week there's not – probably right now there's not going to be a guy you circle and say, this is as close as you can get to Torrey Horton or Dallin Holker.
Yeah, you're clear number one.
A bunch of guys. But there was a guy, R.J. Vick, 6 receptions, 75 yards, and 3 touchdowns. He had some nice plays.
Big time performance. I mean, he's a guy. He was at was it Mount Union? He was D2 a couple of years ago. Really good. Went to Wake Forest last year and hardly played. I think he had 14 snaps or something like that. Like, basically didn't play. So moved on to try and find some playing time. And man, big impact. And he's a guy that all preseason I've been like, okay, he's emerging. Because in spring, like, you'd see him some, but not a ton. Like, I wouldn't say in spring he was like dynamic. But then this preseason camp, it started being like, oh, R.J. Vick, he's making a lot of plays. And then to go and do that, just really impressive. I mean, granted, he got wide open. So credit, to him on route running, Tracy on play calling, all that jazz. But big performance from him. But yeah, to your point about spreading around, Southern Utah obviously is going to be wary of R.J. Vick this week. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, this as a knock on him, but maybe he'll have a quiet game and someone else has a big game, because that's kind of how this is designed, to just move it around based on matchups.
Well, it was nice to see, like, old school Ram at this point, Tommy Maher, get involved, 3 receptions for 43. But Jackson Harper, that screenplay on 3rd and long, first off, the play call and the execution.
That,
the blocking of this, and then you pair that with the hot, nasty speed of Jackson Harper, it works.
Yep. No, I thought that was big because, pretty safe play call on 3rd and long, sort of a let's see if we can get some yardage. If we break it, great. If not, we can kick a field goal. It makes sense. I know fans sometimes grumble with those type of plays, but made a lot of sense in that scenario. And that works great when he just turns it on. Yeah, really well blocked. I need to go back and watch that to see who it was, kind of open those holes up, because there was some really – it might have been R.J. Vick, because Morrow was talking about – he had 3 touchdowns. I think the best part of his game was downfield blocking.
Yeah.
But yeah, big-time speed from Harper. He looked good there. I thought he was good in the punt return game too. So yeah, Harper, I thought he would be a weapon, but we just hadn't seen as much of him because he had dealt with some injury, certainly in spring. But he looked good.
Yeah. I mean, 35-13, Rams win.
CSU only hit 30 points once last year this season.
And to do it against, traditionally, and especially so last year, Wyoming's defense. Jim Moore can reference that. He's like, that's a really good defense. Yeah. I was surprised that R.J. Vick opening there. You didn't see a lot of that against a Wyoming defense.
No. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of that in a while. I mean, just CSU receivers running wide open.
Just big plays when they needed them the most. Yeah. 23 minutes after the hour. Let's turn the page and look at Southern Utah coming to town this weekend. That's a Big Sky Conference team. That's an FCS team. But Kevin's going to tell us why. Hey, don't count your chickens yet. We'll use that one for today. We'll be right back. Rolling on this Thursday, Rams Weekly, presented by Crazy Carl's Pizza, with the one and only Kevin Lytle from the Coloradoan. I'm Brady Hull. And now the Rams got to turn the page, an emotional win, even though they handled their business, but still emotional to keep the boot and fans storming the field and all that stuff that came after. Nothing weird happened after that game. Southern Utah coming to town. Back in the Big Sky Conference. They were in the Big Sky, now back. That's a pretty good team right there. We talked about it earlier, battled it out with Montana in week one, and then won last week over Weber State. They run the ball a lot.
Yes.
A lot of times.
It's kind of an option, not like your Air Force type option, but big time quarterback threat. Their quarterback has a ton of yards. Southern Utah, I almost said Weber, has a ton of yards. They put up more than 500 in both of their games. They had the ball for like 42 minutes against Montana. And Montana is really, really good. Number two in FCS when they played, always a title threat. That was in Montana, too, so on the road. They're dangerous offensively. They're really good offensively. I think that quarterback is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, Will Burns ran for 119 against Montana, and then he put together 148 rushing yards last week against Weber State. And then their true running back, Floyd Chalk, pretty good numbers for him.
And he's a guy, you know, kind of a deep cut here for fans, but he was at San Jose State. So the Rams have faced him, I believe, 2 years ago they faced him. I think he had like 65 yards against CSU. They look pretty dynamic offensively.
Now, is this something where, you know, Rams fans look at this game and go, okay, here comes a Big Sky team again. That we all know what happened last year. And the Rams walk away with a win. And, you know, depending on who you ask, it didn't feel like the Rams won that game. This is where you got to keep your guard up because you just had a big emotional win over Wyoming. You got to be ready for these kind of games.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people ask about this. You know, it was in my mailbag of, is this, you know, kind of the trap game theory. You just beat a big rival. Top 15 BYU is next week. You know, everyone knows that. But if there's any coach that's going to negate that, it's Jim Mora. I talked about his attention to detail last week, and part of that is the focus he demands. And he, you know, his press conference Monday. Well, shoot, let me go backwards. Back to Saturday after the game, he celebrated. He definitely acknowledged how important that rivalry was and how excited they were to win it. But even within that, he said basically like, y'all got tonight, you know, back to work tomorrow. You know, he said the locker room was Club Ram. Club Ram is only open once a week, and that's if you win. So he was already talking about turning the page. Then come Monday, it was all about moving forward. And then I asked him again yesterday, Wednesday, how do you feel they've handled basically moving on? And he's been saying since camp, he thinks this is a really mature team. He's used the phrase mature, competitive maturity, a lot. So he thinks that they've been focused. Again, that's no guarantee they'll play well and all that. But if there's any, you know, coach that I think will negate that trap game vibe, I think it's Jim Mora.
Isn't that kind of too, like, a little, and I know there's plenty of college coaches that are serious, but that's got to be a little bit of that NFL business side. Because after a win in the NFL, there's
on
no
the next one.
There's no boot. There's no rivalry celebration, really. Your rivals, it doesn't mean as much in the NFL. It's all about getting to the playoffs and that kind of thing.
Yep.
Very much a business-like approach.
Yep, and that's another phrase I've used a lot, is this is the most business-like program I've seen at CSU. And, you know, there were some people saying, well, you know, he should be more rah-rah around the board, you know, certainly the boot run ceremony. But this is kind of why he's not. Of if you build that up as this is the biggest game there is, then after it, it's like, well, this game, you know, coach, you're now saying this game is big, but you said last week's game was big. You know, if you're, it can be hard. It's a tricky balance. And with his mentality, it's very much, business. So, that's how certainly he, and it seems like this roster approaches things of, it's business. Yeah, we won one game, now we got to go win the next.
Yeah, hands up on that one too, Kevin. I saw Mora's, Jay saw Vels going all in, and then it was just bam, handoff to Jim Mora, and he's like, let's go get the boot. And I was like, come on, put some oomph into it. But you know what? He put oomph into the game. And that's all that really matters at the end of the day. No one remembers the rah-rah speech after the game.
Exactly. I mean, that's why I kind of laughed when there was some fervor over that. It's like different coaches have handled rivalries different. Some do the big rah-rah. Some do, you know, it's just another week. And you know how fans respond? It depends on what happens in the game. You know, if he had been, you know, big rah-rah and then they'd gone and dominated, it would have been everyone says that's great. He wasn't. They go dominate. Everyone says that's great. You know, it's all results.
I want to talk to you about now there's a path, Kevin. There is a path to the college football playoffs. And we got to thank Boise State for, I think, paving that way last week. Let's get into that coming up. Also, a little more on the Jim Mora effect here in Fort Collins. Keep it on Rams Weekly, presented by Crazy Carl's Pizza. You're listening to Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA. Welcome back in to Rams Weekly, presented by Crazy Carl's Pizza. And hey, one of the things we talked about, Kevin, with, you know, I think even Nick Saban questioned why Jim Mora decided to go to Colorado State. And Jim Mora has been pretty clear. There's a lot of reasons, sure, but also a path to the college football playoffs. Can you get there through the Pac-12?
Yeah, it's, you know, at UConn. So I think there are a couple things, and one I hadn't maybe thought about enough going into that Wyoming game. Mora and those UConn, you know, the guys that came from UConn, they hadn't been playing rivalry games because UConn doesn't really have a football rival. So that was big. I think a lot of them really enjoyed just the environment of that game. So yeah, maybe they'll have some long-born hatred of Wyoming, but it's fun. Like, you can feel the passion. But then, yeah, playoff-wise, the Pac-12 winner should be, most if not all years, in the mix for a CFP spot, where, again, at UConn, you would have to go undefeated to even have a chance. And even then, I don't love their odds. Whereas in the Pac, like, there's a path. Go win the league, and you're going to be in the mix for the playoff.
Well, and how much did that path widen, I suppose, for a Pac-12 team with Boise State? They lose to Oregon in a close game, a touchdown game. Well, 2 years ago, they lost to Oregon by three. That set the stage for Boise State. They went to run the table the rest of the way, and they got into the playoffs. Now the thing you hope for here is that Boise State takes care of business until you face them here in a few weeks, and they're ranked at some point. Now, they didn't crack the top 25 after that, but if they win a few games here, they might. That seems to be where this is headed, and if CSU can keep pace and do what they have to do against Boise State, well, maybe.
You know, obviously winning would have been the ideal result, but Boise State played really well, really competitive. And yeah, a couple of years ago, I think how competitive they were at Oregon helped vault them in, you know, in the mind of voters. And so I think that element applies again. I think Boise State has just as big a game this week playing Memphis, because that's a direct competitor.
Huge.
So if Boise plays Oregon close and then beats Memphis, that's a big if. That's definitely not a guarantee. But that puts the Pac-12 in the leader spot for the G6 bid. Obviously, that would mean Boise State is in that spot because of the results they would have had. But to your point, if someone from the pack then knocks them off, you know, they take over that spot. So, yeah, good. You know, overall, I would say the results for the Pac-12 weren't necessarily amazing, but they got the two they really needed. They needed Boise to be competitive, even though it's a loss, and they did. And they needed CSU to beat Wyoming, because it's a Pac versus Mountain West game, and they got that.
Well, and also, I mean, 33-20, Houston over Oregon State, but more competitive, maybe?
Yeah, no, I would say that, too. That's another one of Oregon State, because they're maybe a team that CSU and them, most people had picked at the bottom of the league. So for them to be, pretty competitive against, you know, what's supposed to be a good team, that's also pretty solid.
Yeah, and I mean, again, even the Washington State thing,
solid, you know. And then, like, Texas State, Texas, doesn't matter. That's a blowout. That's expected. You know, your bad one, of course, is Utah State losing to Idaho State. But they're not counting on Utah State being a juggernaut this year. So it's not great, but it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, you didn't need everybody to do something. You just needed to show a little bit, because this is year one of this new Pac-12.
Yeah, and then, like I said, it's big winning some of these G6 crossover games. There's, you know, Boise State, Memphis this week. CSU plays UTSA in a few weeks. You know, that'll be a big one.
That's always kind of a trouble game.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where a Pac-12 needs to win, in kind of big G6 matchups, and certainly any big P4 scalp you can get would obviously be really important.
What has the Jim Mora effect been like for you? Because you've covered a lot of these coaches. And Jay Norvell, I know, was a fun coach to cover. Mike Bobo was fun. I know the other guy wasn't that much fun to cover, Kevin. But Jim Mora does, and the whole family thing, the NFL pedigree, all of that. What has that been like compared to, let's just go recent, to Jay Norvell? The differences there, not on the field, but off.
No, that's an interesting question. It's, like I say, super business-like program to cover. You know, it's detailed and organized. You know what to expect. I would say my relationship with Jim Mora so far has been good. You know, it's, respectful. Again, he's very business, so it's not like you just hang about chatting about, you know, the MLB games this weekend or anything like that. But respectful. he's obviously has dealt with media in a ton of different situations. You know, being an NFL coach, obviously he's gone through a lot of different, you know, probably media trainings and media situations, press conferences and whatnot. To right now, he seems pretty, you know, you ask a question, he'll give you an answer. Yeah, there are obviously things they want to hide. You know, didn't share that Hosseini was going to be the quarterback during the week, which, you know, didn't surprise us. But, you know, there's some of that, too. But, no, it's just a very business organization, I would say, right now.
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking about that. At the end of the game, just hearing Jim, just kind of some of the things he was saying, the way he seemed to approach this thing, even going back to the exchanging of the boot and all that. That is, and we keep saying business-like, but it also just it just strikes me as, yeah, the border war is cool, but that's not what I'm here for.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Absolutely, that's part of it. Of want to win those games because they're important, but you want to win it because it's important for your bigger goals. And you know, he hasn't. You know, I know some people nationally maybe rolled their eyes when he's talking about playoff, but I think he actually believes that of like, yeah, I'm at a place with a path. And, you know, he didn't come here to, you know, just kind of whatever, have some fun games. Yeah. Wants to win and win big, and CSU's investing big. Like, they're trying to launch this thing.
This has always been because I grew up more of an NFL fan than a college fan. So my take, even starting the sports show, has always been, yeah, rivalry games are neat, but you should want. I remember asking poll questions in the past. Like, would you rather compete for a conference championship, you win all your games, save for your two or three rivalry games, but you're in that mix, or the other way around.
Yeah.
And it was always astonishing to me that a lot of Rams fans are like, just get the boot. Get the boot. That's all we care about.
Yeah, I think that is a unique aspect in college football. I think some people say that and don't actually mean it, because then, you know, if your team goes 2-10 but they won that game, I don't think they're actually happy.
Kind of depends on how it goes.
But yeah, they, you know, the goal here is to win big. CSU is dead set on becoming big in college football.
And everything about Jim Mora in that press conference, Kevin, was, and I said this earlier, but you watch the Broncos. If they beat Kansas City this weekend, it's going to be, good win. That's not what we're here to do, is beat an AFC West team.
Yep.
We know we got a lot of football in front of us. It's to get back to the AFC Championship and get to the unfinished business.
Yep, and that's where there have been several times already, and we're pretty early, where I'm like, this is the NFL mindset of, one happens, you just turn on to the next.
Yeah.
I've felt that a number of times, and that mindset, I think, is very much in play.
Yeah, and I love it. I'm all for, and even though I said put some oomph into it, you know, whatever, I'm still all about, hey, I don't care if you lose to your rivals. If you win the rest of them and you get to your conference championship game, that's what I would rather see. I'd rather see CSU play Boise State for the Pac-12 championship game at the end of the season, even though, they did get the win against Wyoming, but that's what I want to see. I want to see CSU have a real opportunity to be in the college football playoffs.
Exactly. I mean, again, with investment and everything, you know, I've said during the offseason, how many times have we heard from national folks, you know, kind of in season previews, sleeping giant, sleeping giant, sleeping giant. That's become almost a slur. Because how long are you the sleeping giant? CSU and fans and admin even are so desperate for this thing to pop. Because, like I say, it's been too long. You can be a sleeping giant for a little bit, and it's kind of a compliment of like, well, look, they're doing a lot of things. Surely the wins will come. But it's been too long now. So now they're trying to get rid of that moniker and just be a giant, you know, in relative terms. I'm not saying this program's about to become Alabama. But that is their goal, is to be a giant in their level and become more relevant nationally.
I remember when they moved on from Hughes Stadium and the stadium was built, and you had all these very shallow fans.
I was just like,
where's the wins? They have the stadium. And I defended that ad nauseam.
Yeah.
And then there comes a point where it's like you can't defend it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you know, there have been some of those kind of wins per investment dollar. And CSU hasn't come out well because they've been investing a lot of late but not winning a lot of late. So, yeah, you need to turn that around.
Yeah, well, we'll see if they can. Got to handle Southern Utah this weekend and start 2-0 on the season. Kevin, coming up next, we'll do our first official Pac-12 rankings.
The undisputed, 100% accurate, Cannot disagree because it's so perfect. Power rankings.
I don't think anyone will.
It's a long name.
No, yeah, that's a good name though.
Yeah,
that's a great name. Pac-12 rankings coming. The Rams weekly Pac-12 rankings coming up next. Kevin Lytle, instead of picking games, I thought this would be more fun. Go back to our rankings, our power, the Rams weekly power rankings.
Rams weekly, 100% accurate, never wrong.
Never wrong.
Deadlock power rankings.
Deadlock power rankings. Let's start from the bottom up, shall we?
Yep, yep.
Okay, so here we got to go. You're a team that loses to an FCS school and you lose by
and
two
bad,
scores.
Yeah,
we got to go Utah State.
Utah State, congrats. Right? You're first of last place.
And there's still a lot of unknown about this next team, but you get, what, almost 60 put up on you and you shut out?
Yep, this is one of those, like, hey, you're supposed to lose bad at Texas, as Texas State did. We're going to learn more about them this week because they play UTSA, which is one of those G6 crossovers I was talking about. Also, quick fun fact, Texas State's whole non-conference is in the state of Texas, only against Texas teams.
Well, how about that?
Yeah.
That is
fun fact.
Hey,
yeah.
That makes the travel kind of
true.
You know,
great travel.
All right, let's go next here. Fresno State, just
team. Yeah, team that people think should and will be pretty good. Losing at USC isn't bad, but they looked bad.
This is one where you also a tip of the cap to you. We're going to do that. We've had three of these today. Three tip of the caps. One defensively. One about the spread out of this offense, and the other was about Fresno State for 1 week at least. You said there might be a little.
I was
overrated.
A little cautious. I was a little cautious on them. Yeah.
So Fresno State. We went back and forth here. The OGs of the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Both had decent showings. Didn't win.
Yeah.
But better than I think a lot of people did. So we kind of just went back and forth here. But we're going to go.
Did Oregon State at 5? Their team, like I said, on the flip side of the break. Them and CSU were who most people picked to finish last, one of them last. But they played pretty well down at Houston, pretty competitive. Certainly showed enough for me to kind of put pause on thinking that they're a bottom feeder.
One of the last games of the weekend was on Sunday.
Yeah,
that
strange.
Was Washington State.
Another one of those having a weird early rivalry game. But yeah, Washington State hung in pretty decent. And it was at Washington, which is one of the most beautiful settings I've ever been to. But anyway, Washington State, I think they'll be decent again. Kind of a lot of unknowns there.
Yeah, this was a tough one. Did we make the homer pick here? Did I make homer pick, Kevin? San Diego State did beat Portland State 53-20. They handled their business.
They basically did what they're supposed to. And they're a team that we think will be in the mix near the top. So San Diego State, 3.
Okay, here's the big one.
Yeah, and this is where, if you take away preseason and just look at what happened. Again, this isn't projected standings. It's the power ranking for now. CSU played, is one of the only kind of like-for-like games because it was a lot of either the Pac team was kind of expected to get blown out or, in Boise's case, which we'll get to, kind of a really, really high-level performance, or in San Diego State's case, they were supposed to blow them out. This was kind of the most Jeopardy game, and CSU handled it. They dominated.
They did. That second half especially, Colorado State gets it done.
Yep.
So number two for CSU. Where did you have CSU before?
I guess we didn't do an official poll, but I believe I've had them, Tyler King, our friend in the media, did a kind of unofficial media poll, and for that, I believe I picked CSU 5th.
Okay, CSU
to finish 5th in the Pac-12.
All right, so moved up.
So moving up
spots.
Right now,
yeah,
but we'll see.
Gotta like that. And then, of course, number one.
Number
even
one,
after a loss.
Even with a loss, it's gotta be Boise. You go to Oregon, who a lot of people think is a national title threat, and hang right in there. It has to be Boise.
Let's take a look at, we got about a minute here, Kevin, of could these change? Like, if CSU wins, and maybe they don't even cover, but they win by like two scores or something, probably not a ton of movement there.
No, that would kind of hold serve depending on other results.
Now,
Boise, obviously.
Huge game.
Playing Memphis, if they win that one, they're kind of undisputed top of the pack.
How about if Washington State goes and pulls off something crazy against K-State?
Yeah.
Now, they're 17.5 point dogs, but I don't know how good K-State's going to be this year.
Tanner Morley, old,
yeah.
old CSU players there.
Utah State plays Washington.
Yeah, that's one you would expect with how Utah State played last week, though that's probably going to be kind of ugly.
Michael Washington is a 26.5-point favorite in that game, by the way. You mentioned the UTSA-Texas State game. San Diego State taking on UCLA. UCLA minus 12.5.
This is one, like, you know, San Diego State doesn't have to win it, but we're going to learn how legit they are in that one. Because that's a potentially winnable game.
And Oregon State, Texas Tech. Texas Tech 25.5. Do you think they'll gamble on the over or under in that game? I don't know. Sorsby's not
there. That
was
clever.
They don't have to mess with that, Kevin. So there it is. Boise State, Colorado State, San Diego State, Washington State, Oregon State, Fresno State, Texas State, Utah State. A lot of states.
Perfect.
In this
state conference.
State conference. Kevin, great job as always, my man. Think I'll see you Saturday. If not, I'll see you next week.
Back at it.
All right. Rams Weekly presented by Crazy Carl's Pizza. Find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or 1310kfka.com.
This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.